This is Ron Archer at MiamiAstrology.com, and you're listening to my Astrologers Across America interview series. Today I'm talking to David Aronson, an astrologer in Pennsylvania. Good afternoon, David.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. So, David, you're near Philadelphia?
Yeah, I actually live in a suburb of Philadelphia, maybe a half an hour north of Philadelphia.
And are you from Pennsylvania originally?
Yeah, I'm a native Philadelphian.
Okay, I'm from Pittsburgh originally myself.
Oh, okay.
So, how long have you been practicing astrology?
Well, I've been practicing it professionally for maybe 10 years, but I've really been studying it most of my adult life. I'm 47 now, so I guess that's over 25 years.
And how did you get your start in it?
I'm also a healer as well as an astrologer. I work with several different modalities. I'm a hypnotherapist, and I do different types of energy work. And I guess way back when I was trying to, work out my own issues, I needed to understand myself better. And astrology, I guess, was one of the things I found, one of the tools I found to understand, the inner workings of my psyche. So as far as the specific details, I can't really remember, how I happened onto it. I've always been interested in things to do with psychology and how the mind works and things that I guess you could consider esoteric or occult, the inner workings of things.
Mm-hmm. How well received are, healing energies and astrology and such in the area of Pennsylvania where you are?
I think it's pretty well received. Philadelphia is a big city, and people in big cities, I think, tend to be more open-minded in general and more willing to try new things. I've never really had anybody, say anything against it, like, oh, that's a bunch of bull or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It's all relative. Compared to California, say, Northern California, San Francisco area, it's probably not as prevalent, but, I don't really have a lot to compare it to. So, in my experience, it's pretty well received in general. And even if people are not really interested in maybe having a session, they're still pretty open to the idea that, it can be a useful tool. At
mm-hmm.
least that's been my experience.
Mm-hmm. Are there local astrology groups that you participate in your area?
Astrology groups.
We have a local astrology club here in South Florida that meets monthly and have speakers and things like that.
I see what you're saying. Actually, there are astrology groups near me. I just have not attended, mainly for just because of logistical reasons. It was just, it conflicted with my schedule or it was hard to get to or something like that. So, yeah, there are groups like that. I just personally have not participated in them.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to, but, I have a lot of other things going on, so.
Sure. No, I understand. I know for myself, I also do technology work, but I work remotely. So both with the astrology and with my regular work, I'm just dealing with people, either on the phone or via the computer and, really enjoy the time when I can actually, meet up with other astrologers, and chit-chat face-to-face and, hear about what they're doing. So do you belong to
sure.
any national groups like the NCGR or the AFA?
No, I don't.
Okay. So when clients call you, do clients call you specifically for astrology, or is the healing work your sort of main foray into client work and then you sort of upsell the astrology?
No, it's usually the other way around. Usually people will want a reading. I also read tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
So people will either want a tarot reading. Actually, it usually starts with a tarot reading. It starts with a tarot reading, and then they find out I do astrology, and then, they're interested because they want to get more into depth with understanding themselves and what's going on in their lives. And then, if they're having some sort of problem, which usually they are, because that's usually why people contact me, is because something in their life isn't working and they want to understand themselves better, then I suggest the healing work. No, if it's something I feel they could use, I don't suggest it if it's not something they really need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you look at charts, is there something that you're sort of initially drawn to? You know, a lot of people look to the nodes first to get some information, or people are really into Saturn and they want to see where Saturn's transiting in a chart. Is there something that you sort of use just as a quick eyeball of a chart?
Actually, yes. Like I said, being a healer, I tend to attract clients who are looking to understand themselves, you know, so that they can, you know, correct some problem in their life, or, you know, make something work that isn't working. I don't have one specific thing. Like you said, people look at Saturn or the nodes. I don't have one specific thing like that. It comes out of conversation with the client. They tell me what's going on. You know, I use that as a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening in your life? You know, what are you hoping to get out of this? You know, is there some specific area of life that you need clarity on? And then when they tell me that, you know, then I'll look for that. Like, for example, if, you know, they have some sort of childhood issue with their mother, you know, then I'll look at things in the chart that would indicate mother. I'll look at the moon, or I'll look at the fourth house or the tenth house, you know, things like that.
Okay. Do you follow any particular sort of school of astrology, so to speak? I know a lot of folks that I've talked to have come out of Jeff Green's, you know, evolutionary astrology school. I know there are people who are really into very, you know, traditional Hellenistic astrology now. Is there any sort of particular brand or type of astrology that you follow or focus on?
Well, I'm definitely very attracted to evolutionary astrology. And I do use, you know, that focus of those ideas a lot. I do tend to look at, you know, what is the soul's purpose and what is the soul's lesson in this lifetime? You know, what are the karmic lessons? That sort of thing. So I do look at the nodes a lot and Pluto, as they do in evolutionary astrology. But I wouldn't call myself an adherent to any one particular school, like, oh, I do this kind of astrology and not anything else. But, you know, there's definitely a slant towards the evolutionary perspective, and also, I guess, what you might call the psychological perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my readings very often end up being like, you know, mini psychotherapy sessions, because I do have a tendency to look at everything in terms of people's psychology. You know,
mm-hmm.
So if there's a school called psychological astrology, then I guess, you know, that and evolutionary would be the closest things, I guess. And then, you know, if people really, again, it depends on what the client wants. You know, I really try to gear it towards what the client wants. You know, if the client wants, for example, if I do a transit reading, you know, and the client wants to know very specific things like, you know, should I do this, or should I, you know, should I quit my job, or, you know, should I wait it out, or, you know, whatever it is that they want to know, you know, then the focus would be more on, you know, that sort of concrete, I guess, a more traditional approach, where, you know, you're looking at things as predictions of actual events rather
mm-hmm.
than, you know, things, internal things going on, internal processes.
Sure. And do you have, did you study with particular teachers, or are you mostly self-taught?
I'm pretty much self-taught. I've probably read, I don't know how many thousands, I've read literally thousands of books on astrology. But, you know, I learned just from years and years of reading people's charts. You know, I jumped right into it, even before I even felt like I knew what I was doing. You know, for a long time, any time I would meet somebody who was interested at all, I'd be like, hey, let me read your chart. And I did that for years and years and years and years. And, you know, that's, I think, how I really learned, by seeing how these symbols, you know, what these symbols are actually telling me about this real person in front of me, you know, and how it's playing out in their lives. And I actually did once start to take a certification course, because I guess at the time I wasn't getting a lot of clients, and I felt like, well, maybe if I had a certificate or a degree or what have you, you know, that would mean something. People would be more, you know, likely to use me. They say, oh, he's accredited by so-and-so. So I started to take this course, and halfway through it, I realized that I pretty much knew everything. already that they were teaching me, you know. And even the teacher, my teacher, was saying, like, wow, you're really good at this, you know. Do you really need this? And so I never even finished it because I just felt like it was a waste of money. And I felt like, well, you know, I'm a good astrologer. And, you know, people are usually satisfied with my readings. And, you know, I mean, why do I need, you know, this certification from somebody else when I know that I'm good? So, you know, the proof is in the pudding.
Sure, and that's an interesting point because that's I do tend to go to some of the larger conferences, astrology conferences that different organizations put on, and you know, certification is sort of a hot button topic for you know a lot of people. You know, I've talked to many astrologers, obviously, doing these interviews that you know have never been certified and don't see a need for it, and then there are those that feel that it's a good thing because it maintains some level of it sort of levels the playing field for our profession as a whole, right? You know, somebody may be a really great astrologer and have 20 or 30 or 40 years, but, you know, maybe the certification helps the profession as opposed to just the individual.
Well, no, I agree. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think it's a really good thing. I think, yeah, for all the reasons that you said. And also, you know, I mean, I was hoping to learn new things from this course I took. You know, I mean, you can never stop learning. I mean, there's always more to understand. And, you know, different people learn in different ways. And so, you know, certification is definitely a good thing. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying that was my experience.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, that particular course, I wasn't getting anything from it. You know, maybe a different course would have been different. You know, and
mm-hmm.
maybe there would have been things that I didn't know. You know, but that was just my experience.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's definitely a good thing. You know, I agree with you 100%. Certification all the way.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm suggesting a certification all the way. Again, like I said, just being a part of some different organizations and knowing that, you know, there's some strong feelings on both sides, you know, and there's also the question of, well, who certifies the certifier? Who made group, you know, the group to say that this is what, you know, a well-rounded astrology education or, you know, knowledge looks like.
That's true. I guess it is a fine line. You know, you don't want to become too rigid. You know, you want to leave room for people to have their own individual styles and, you know, for people to continue to, you know, push the boundaries of astrology. Because, I mean, you know, the field itself is just growing, like, incredibly and just moving out in all different directions, like, in the past 20, 30 years, wouldn't you say?
I would say, and I've only been involved for about the past 10 years myself. I've been studying for about 10 years and have been reading charts professionally for about 3 years now. So I'm, I'd say relatively new, but yeah, I would just based on, again, my experience in meeting other astrologers and going to conferences that, yeah, there's quite a bit happening in our field, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, a lot of new discoveries and just people really sort of taking different approaches and, you know, if you had this sort of central governing body that had these very rigid guidelines, I don't think that would be a good thing either.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So aside from education, are there things that you've done over the years? I mean, obviously just reading more charts is going to improve your ability to read a chart, but have there been maybe specific books or specific things that you learned that you thought, God, this really helped me look at something in a new way or really took my chart reading to the next level?
Well, nothing really stands out. I think just for me, it's a very personal thing. I think that, you know, because I myself am on, you know, involved in this process of evolution and healing and transformation and, you know, becoming, you know, actualizing my potential, you know, and, you know, the deeper I go with that, the more open I become to people, and the deeper I can go with people, you know, the better the readings get.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing really stands out like, oh, yeah, that completely changed everything for me, that book or that. You know, it comes from everywhere. It comes from the books I read, but it also comes from just experiences I have with people. And, you know, there have been times when just my abilities just made like this quantum leap, and I don't even know how it happened. You know, something changed in my life, and I just noticed that, you know, the readings were getting, you know, deeper or, you know, more detailed or more accurate or what have you.
Hmm.
So, yeah, no, I'm sorry. I can't think of any one specific thing that that jumps out at me. I can tell you, I'm sorry, I can tell you specific astrologers that I've gotten a lot out of their writings, though. How's that?
Sure, I'd be happy to share that.
Okay, well, I guess number one would have to be Liz Green,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, she's a psychotherapist as well as an astrologer. And also, she brings in, you know, the myth. She brings in the mythological aspects
mm-hmm.
of, you know, how people actually play out these myths, how myths are really descriptions of sort of common cycles and patterns in people's lives, you know, kind of like archetypal patterns that people tend to repeat over and over. And they've been, you know, codified in these myths. So she brings all those things together, and I'm very much interested in mythology as well, you know, the archetypal level of existence, and I bring that in too. So she's been, like, you know, really, I've gotten a lot out of her writings. And then you mentioned evolutionary astrology, Jeffrey Green, and his book on Pluto, I guess, was really influential. For me, it really helped him understand a lot of things.
And how do you read Pluto in a personal chart?
I'm sorry, what?
How would you read Pluto in a person's chart?
Well, see, Pluto, I have a very strong Pluto. I'm what I guess you would call a Plutonian person. And so I think I understand Pluto really well because I've had to deal with this so much in my own life.
And you're saying that because of where Pluto appears in your own personal chart?
Yes. Yes, and how it's, you know, and how it's acted in my life, and I tend to attract people who are kind of Plutonian, and so I'm sorry. The original question was, how do I read that in a person's chart?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as an astrologer, we know Pluto is the planet of transformation. So when you see it in, say, you know, a certain placement in someone's chart, you know, how do you approach that? I mean, do you, you know, or what are the key words that you like to use? You know, how do you unfold Pluto for somebody who knows nothing about it, like we know about it?
Oh, if I was going to tell somebody who knows nothing about astrology?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I guess usually when I'm explaining it, I'll tell people, you know, what the transpersonal planets are about, Pluto, Uranus, Neptune. I explain the difference between the personal and the transpersonal, and I usually describe the transpersonal planets as being evolutionary forces that are very powerful, that sort of transcend the personal, that transcend the desires of the ego, that are more kind of what your soul needs or what you need karmically to evolve, and that when they are active in your life, that they're pretty much going to just sweep you along whether you like it or not. And so it's easier to sort of try to work with them than resist them.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's if people have them personalized. If people don't have them personalized, then it's usually more, you know, a generational influence, like how you've been influenced, you know, how your worldview has been influenced by your generation. But like I said, I tend to attract people who are, you know, who usually have one or more outer planets personalized and have them active in their life. And then Pluto in particular, you know, its mode of transformation is through death and rebirth. So whenever Pluto touches things, you have the element of something that needs to die or that dies, or something that you need to let go of completely. It can also be, you know, an area where you're blocked, an area where there's a lot of congestion and repression. You know, Pluto creates this sort of serious repression where people bury things very deeply, you know, in their subconscious. I can see it as, you know, the Jungian shadow, you know, you have all the aspects of yourself that have been denied and repressed.
Hmm.
You know, there's a lot of different ways of looking at it. It really depends on the context, you know, what other planets it's touching and what house it's in and so forth. But it's, you know, it's an intense energy. And it's an energy that can be very difficult to deal with, but I think if you make friends with it, you know, you know, if you look at the myth of Pluto in the underworld, you know, there are riches to be found in the underworld. You know, that's part of the mythology. Like if you brave the journey, then there's great riches to be had from your when you come out the other end. So I guess, does that answer the question, or?
Sure. And I don't, you know, and interestingly, you know, attract a Plutonian type. I don't know that I would describe myself as Plutonian, although I do have a moon Pluto opposition that's to the minute. So it's pretty intense.
I'm sorry, wait, you have that in your birth chart?
Yeah, it's
have
in
that?
My birth chart, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'd say that's pretty intense. So you're somebody who you find yourself, you know, experiencing very powerful emotions that can overwhelm you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of question I would ask somebody who came in with a moon Pluto opposition. You know, I'd start off with something like that, and then see how that's you know, acting in their lives, how they're actually expressing that, or you know, what's manifesting in their lives because of that, and then work from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like to look at solutions. I like to try to give people solutions when I look at their charts. Like I see like the culprit, you know, they say, oh, well, I have these issues and those issues. I look at the chart like, ah, well, here's the culprit. You know, you have your moon opposite Pluto and that's, you know, creating this, that, and the other thing. Or, you know, or it's symbolic of this, that, or the other thing if you don't want to see it as causal. But then I try to look for it like, well, you know, what else is aspecting your moon? You know, what positive things are going on with your moon that could maybe balance that, or that may be a solution. Or it doesn't even have to be something with the moon. It could be something else in the chart. But, you know, I like to look for untapped potential. I like to look at things that are possible strengths for people that maybe they're not tapping into, that may be a balance or a counter to, you know, the heavy things in their chart that are causing them grief.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, in talking about, you know, evolution and the evolutionary process that we all go through over the course of our lives, do you feel that having a strong spiritual practice is important as an astrologer?
I don't know. Again, it depends on what kind of astrology you do, you know. I mean, for the kind of astrology that I do, I'd say, yeah, but I don't do the one for the other. You know, it's just who I am, you know, and that's probably why I get the type of clients that I do. And I mean, I'm sure there are astrologers who aren't particularly spiritual, who are maybe more just, I don't even know, you know, more practical, I guess. You know, they just see it as a tool. They just see it as, you know, just something that happens to work mm-hmm. for whatever reason, you know, for some scientific reason that hasn't really been discovered yet. You know, the movement of the planetary bodies somehow parallels, you know, the patterns in people's lives and events in people's lives. And if we can read the one, then we can read the other. And there doesn't need to really be any kind of spiritual element to it. I mean, you could certainly practice astrology that way, I guess. I mean, I don't know anybody who does, but.
It's interesting, you know, and just, you know, gauging the responses I've been getting, you know, I'm finding that, you know, most astrologers have said, well, yes, you know, I feel it's important to have a strong spiritual practice for whatever reason. And, you know, it sounds like they've taken on many different forms. Some astrologers I've talked to have, you know, maintained the same religion or spiritual belief that they were brought up with. You know, others, you know, like myself, have, you know, sort of really changed the way I view spirituality from the way I was, you know, taught as a child. And then there have been a handful who said, no, I don't think it matters. You know, the astrologer is the astrologer. It's, you know, however he or she conducts their lives outside of the reading is irrelevant. And, you know, for instance, a financial astrologer, right? What difference does it make if they have a spiritual practice or not? They're not necessarily giving you, you know, soulful or spiritual advice, right? It's more monetary.
Right. And also, I don't like to tell people how they should, you know, run their affairs. I mean, I'm really opposed to that. I don't want people telling me, you know, it gets back to that whole thing we were talking about with the certification. I mean, like, you know, who's to say, like, well, if you're an astrologer, you have to do it this way or you have to be this way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you feel a spiritual practice is important, then great. You know, have a spiritual practice. If you don't, then you don't. Like, who am I to say that you should or you shouldn't? I can only really say what works for me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't dictate to other astrologers what they should or shouldn't be doing.
You find it important to maintain some connection with a higher power or source?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a very spiritual person, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't, I mean, to do the kind of healing work I do, you can't help but be, because you're basically opening yourself up to, you know, higher energies, for lack of a better word. I do something called integrated energy therapy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I'm not.
No? No. Well, they do a lot of work with angels. And, you know, some people may have a problem with that word. You know, I actually did before I started doing it. I see these books and they'd be talking about angels, like, oh, angels, come on, you know, what is this? And then when I started doing it, I was like, wow, okay, there are these non-physical beings here who are assisting me. We could call them angels, we could call them something else. You can call them whatever you want to call them, you know?
Hmm.
But, and, you know, and also doing the tarot reading and just everything that I do basically just opens me up to, I guess, the spirit world, for lack of a better term. And
mm-hmm.
so you can't really help but have a connection with some sort of divinity, some sort of God presence. You know, I mean, these I hate to use these words because they're all really loaded words. And, you know, I don't want to give people the wrong idea. You know, my spirituality is very non-denominational. It's very personal. It's very, like, you know, it doesn't have to do with any particular creed or system necessarily, you know, that excludes anything else. I mean, whatever works for people is fine. You know what I mean? If you're a Christian or a Buddhist or whatever, you know, whatever you are, if you just have your own personal thing and it doesn't have a name, you know what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, were you raised with a particular faith as a child?
Well, my parents are Jewish, but they weren't really religious Jews. They were Jews that were more interested in sort of the ethics of Judaism. You know, they saw Judaism as a system of an ethical system to tell people how to behave ethically in the world. And when it came to ideas like God or an afterlife or anything, they didn't really believe in any of that. They were kind of atheistic, I guess. So I wasn't really raised with any kind of religion in that sense. And in fact, when I was a little kid, I used to go around telling people I was an atheist because, you know, my parents told me, well, you know, I asked them, well, what's God? And they said, well, God's not a man in the sky with a long white beard. And, well, what is God? Well, they didn't really have an answer for me, you know. So I concluded, well, there must be no God. So I was like 8 years old. I'm going around, I'm an atheist, you know. But then when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I started to have a lot of, I guess what you call mystical experiences, where I was really connecting with something that you could call God, you know, some larger creative intelligence in the universe. And I was like, oh, okay, this is God, you know, this is what you could call God. You know, it's closer to, I guess, you know, it's closer to the Tao, I guess, if you're familiar with Taoism,
mm-hmm.
you know, or Brahman or the Great Spirit in Native America. It's closer to that. It's not a personalized thing. You know, it's not an anthropomorphized God. So I connected with that, and then I said, oh, okay, that's what that is. And so ever since then, I've really been mistrustful of any kind of religion that's not experiential, any kind of religion where you just have to take it on faith. That, you know, these people had these experiences and they made up these rules for how you're supposed to live. Like, if you don't experience God yourself, then to me it's not really worth anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hmm. So to switch gears a little bit, David,
sure.
I'm curious, you know, about your just practice in general. you know, is this something that, you know, you do full time? I'm curious, you know, how much time you spend, do you things like marketing and advertising? How do you sort of run your business, so to speak?
Yeah, I was going to say we're kind of getting away from astrology. Well, it's not the only thing I do. Like I said, I do the healing work, and I'm also an artist and an art teacher. So my time is really divided among a lot of things, and I really would actually like to do a lot more astrology. I would like to see a lot more clients. The best success I've had in terms of attracting clients has been from just having a website up online and having my website listed in various directories on the internet and just having it linked in various places. That's pretty much how people find me. And then through word of mouth in the local community. I did try advertising a few times in New Age magazines and things of that nature. I never really seemed to get much of a response from that. It really didn't seem worth the money I was putting into it.
It's been my experience, too.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so, I mean, if anybody has any suggestions, I'm open, you know, for better ways to market myself because, like I said, the only thing that's really worked for me is just, you know, having the website. I know a lot of astrologers, like, have blogs, and, you know, they update their blogs all the time, and I guess that's a way to sort of attract people because people want to read the blog. I'm not really sure how many people who read their blogs actually end up having readings from these people. But it's not really the kind of thing I could see myself doing because I'm not the type of astrologer who's really interested in, you know, why celebrities are, you know, why their marriages are breaking up or
sure,
you know,
right.
That sort of thing that a lot of them write about. They're basically writing about current events and how it's reflected in, you know, what the planets are doing right now up in
mm-hmm.
the sky. And not that that's a bad thing. You know, it actually can be really interesting. I actually read some of these blogs. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. I see the connection between this and that. And it's just not my thing, you know.
Sure.
I just
sure.
can't see myself doing it. It's like I said, my focus is on healing and on, you know, psychology and that sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So, you know, when you tell folks that you're an astrologer or into the healing work or esoteric work, they must ask you about 2012. Do you have your canned response for folks who are asking about 2012?
I haven't had a lot of people asking me, actually. Actually, I don't go around telling people that I'm an astrologer. It's like not the first thing when I meet people. Hi, how you doing? Oh, I'm an astrologer. I usually wait.
No wonder you don't have any clients. Maybe you should. I'm just kidding.
What's that?
I said maybe you should. You get more clients.
Oh, yeah, well, maybe. I mean, I don't hide it. I just wait to see if people are open to it.
Of course.
You know. No, I tell people. I don't hide it. But I really haven't had a lot of people ask about 2012. I didn't realize that was an astrological thing. I thought people were more sort of focused on the idea that it's the Mayan calendar prophecy. It's like a prophecy thing.
Yeah, I think it is too. It does get conflated with the astrology,
okay.
And I think there is a good number of astrologers who are not helping. The cardinal cross that's happening will be happening this year and over the next couple of years. You know, I guess because it coincides with 2012.
Oh, right. The cardinal cross. You say astrologers aren't helping. Why? What are they saying? Are they giving like these doomsday scenarios? Or
no, I mean not helping to sort of clarify that, you know, the Mayan calendar is one thing and astrology is another thing. I mean,
oh, I see
certainly
what you're
the calendar was, you know, based on the cycles of Venus, but, you know, how they calculated it and their cosmology at the time is much different than modern astrology.
Well, I mean, you know, I personally don't believe that, you know, the world's going to end on December, whatever it is, 2012. In fact, my gut feeling about it is that probably nothing majorly eventful will happen, but that 5, 10, 15 years down the road, people are going to look back at 2012 and realize that that was sort of the starting point of a lot of changes. that's kind of my feeling about it. I definitely think that, you know, our society is moving towards some radical changes. I mean, it just seems inevitable because I don't think things can keep going the way they are, you know, without just completely falling apart. And I think more and more people are sort of coming to that conclusion. And it's just, you know, when's the tipping point? When do enough people wake up to the fact that things need to be changed for it to actually happen? You know, and maybe 2012 will be that point when, you know, that critical mass is reached where enough people are ready to move into something new that it actually starts happening. I don't know. But, you know, I tend to take an optimistic, I'm a Sagittarius, so I tend to take an optimistic point of view on that whole thing, you know. I mean, it could be that in the world, who knows, but, you know, I prefer not to dwell on that. I don't really think so, though. In my heart of hearts, I don't think, like, you know, there's going to be a big nuclear explosion and the end of everything. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Sure.
And I think you have to read deeper into, you know, if you're really going to look at the Mayan calendar and astrology, you really have to look deeper because these are symbolic languages. They're not really meant to be taken literally, necessarily. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people just have to look, like Daniel Pinchbeck. I think it's Daniel. Is it Daniel Pinchbeck?
Yeah.
Familiar him? Yeah, he wrote a book about it that I thought was, like, really great. Really basically saying, you know, what I was just saying, like, this is symbolism. Let's look at what the symbolism means. Let's look at what it could actually mean for what's actually going to be happening in our world. And also, he said, like, let's not be so fatalistic about it. Like, we have the power to, you know, people are acting like, well, we're powerless. Just there are these forces at work. And that's it. You know, there's nothing we can do. But he's saying, no, it's an opportunity. It's open. This is like a window of opportunity is really what it is. And we need to, you know, take the bull by the horns and actually make things happen. And, you know, it's up to us what direction things go in. You know, do we create something that's more workable, more sustainable for our world? Or do we let it go down the toilet? Like, it's up to us. It's not this, you know, fatalistic thing that we have no control over. You know? So I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, that's a good point, David. And as a matter of fact, last night was one of our local astrology club meeting, and Lynn Bell is speaking this weekend, and she was talking about, you know, Uranus moving into Aries. And, you know, she went back, you know, through a couple of centuries and brought up some examples of when, you know, Uranus went into Aries and, you know, what was happening socially. And, you know, I believe the Uranus and Aries period that was, I'm going to say it was in the 1500s when the Spanish reached, you know, the New World, you know, for them, Uranus and Aries was, oh, we've opened up this new vista. And for the natives, it was quite different. You know, it was
right.
The end of their world as they knew it. So it's certainly
right.
A matter of perspective. Well, anyway, David, you know, I know astrology can be an all-consuming hobby. You mentioned you also do art. What kind of art do you do?
Well, I'm a professional illustrator primarily, but I also paint and do, I guess, what you could call fine art. And I did go to art school, and, you know, that's something that I pursue actively as well. I guess a lot of my art has to do with the same sort of things that we've been talking about, you know. It all sort of fits together. A lot of my art is very psychological. A lot of it is about sort of delving into the psyche. A lot of it has mythological themes. Some of it has occult themes. Yeah, astrology, it is kind of all-consuming because I'm always, in my mind, relating everything back to it. Like whenever if I'm being introspective and sort of trying to, you know, figure out what's going on, why I'm responding to things the way I am, or why I'm thinking certain ways, I'll always, you know, refer back to my chart in my head, like, oh, I have Venus in Capricorn. Oh, yeah, okay. That's an interesting manifestation of that. Like, you know, how deeply can I understand how one manifests Venus in Capricorn or how one expresses it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm interacting with other people, you know, I'm always thinking, you know, whenever I meet somebody new, if they're open to it, I always want to do their chart, or I always want to know or know something about them. Like if they know anything, like their sun sign, their moon sign, however much they know, I want to know it. Because then whenever I'm interacting with them, as I'm getting to know them, I'm always referring to what I know about their chart and seeing how it all how it all fits. So it is all consuming in that sense, not in the sense of actually practicing it, like sitting down with people and doing charge, but just in the sense of having it be like a worldview,
mm-hmm.
or just a system that all human behavior can be plugged into. And since it's this thing where I feel like it's like infinite in its complexity, like you can never understand it completely. You know what I mean? Till the day you die, there's just sort of deeper levels you can go to with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just, you know, everything is always plugged into it. So yeah, I understand what you mean by it being all consuming in that sense. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it is wonderful to meet new people and to listen to the words that they're saying and to, you know, listen to how people do speak their chart.
Yeah.
Well, David, I really appreciate your time this afternoon and agreeing to the interview. It's been nice to meet you virtually over the phone.
Likewise.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.